We are on number 10 in this series and about our one another work, and it really has to do a bit with what Travis was talking about there. In fact, a great deal with what Travis is talking about. We're talking about how those little wires get bound together in actual life, and do be listening and watching for the other parts of what he's talking about there over these next few weeks. I want to mention about Tabby's grandmother. I believe the memorial service is planned for Friday morning and at Green Lawn North. And the plan they have is for there to be a visiting time for 1 hour from 10 to 11, and then the actual memorial itself will be a graveside, as I understand it. So the visiting will be in the chapel there, but then the memorial will be at the graveside. So please remember their family, all of them, in your prayers. I think Tabby's also not feeling well today, so got a lot of stuff at one time. All right, tonight the one of our one another's that comes next is this one: bear one another's burdens. Can you remember a time when some of your brothers and sisters bore your burdens, or a burden of yours in some way? This is actually the last question I put on your sheet. I want to kind of start with it to see if our thinking about it changes any while we work through this text. Can you remember a time when one of your brothers and sisters, or more than one, bore a burden of yours? And if so, what form did that take? I just mentioned to you that has to have happened in some form or another, or you wouldn't be sitting in a building tonight having a class. No one would have just led a song or sung a prayer. That is a part of our care for each other. It's only a small part. If you've ever had someone who has come to your side with a word of encouragement or an expression of congratulations, if you've ever had someone bring a dish to your house at a time of illness or some other situation, if anyone ever offered to keep your kids for you for a few minutes, or when there was a need, if someone ever sent you a card expressing an interest in what was going on in your life, if someone ever said to you, "I missed you," or "I thought you did a good job," all of that would be a form of this. It's not exactly the one brought up in this paragraph in Galatians 6. And I want tonight to maybe take a little bit different approach in this one than we have in some of the others, just in how we come up to this theme here. I think doing this in this paragraph is important. And I'd like for us to start by just having the paragraph read for us. John, do you mind to just stand where you are there? I know you don't have the mic and I can't hand it to you, but to avoid my talking the whole time, would you please read Galatians 6, verses 1 through 5? And before John does this, I'd like to point out to you something you all already know, I'm sure. The chapter divisions and the verses are not a part of the original text. So though I am having John start at chapter 6 and verse 1, there is not a change of subject from the end of chapter 5. And you can see that by noticing that we ended by saying that if we live by the Spirit, let's keep in step with the Spirit. Let's not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. And what he is about to ask is that we do the opposite of those things. Instead of the negative, not becoming conceited, provoking, or envying one another, here's what we should do. All right, John.
Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something, when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load.
All right. Thank you, John. Now, the kernel in the middle of this is the one we're after in verse 2, but I feel like that we ought to try to make it be in its paragraph here. So I want to begin with, as you can notice on your outline I handed you, with a couple of observations about the whole thing, and then I want to explain to you the approach that we're going to take in reading this and thinking through this tonight. First off, this paragraph, obviously, if you think about it, uses or draws upon or applies some concepts from the previous section in Galatians chapter 5, the last half of it. For example, the term spiritual in verse 1 is going to be drawn from the discussion about walking by the Spirit and being led by the Spirit and living by the Spirit and keeping in step with the Spirit and bearing the fruit of the Spirit. Right? So Paul doesn't just dump the term spiritual into this. To fulfill the law of Christ in this case, matches with chapter 5 and verse 14. The whole law is fulfilled in one word. Same idea, see? So, and then the interest in having reason to boast, and that being in oneself alone in verse 4 goes back to the being conceited and provoking and so forth at the end of chapter 5, verse 26. So these are all ideas that are brought forward. So what that tells us is the things he says here are going to be based on what he's just said. The contrast about the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit. Secondly, and this is the principal part of this, this paragraph expresses a principle for dealing with all burdens in the context of instruction about how to address a particular burden or particular how to handle a particular burden. Now, the principle for all of them is bear one another's burdens. That in a family of the Lord's people, that principle, no matter what burden it is, that principle guides us. We're supposed to step in and help shoulder the burden, right? But the particular one is in verse, the particular burden is in verse 1. What is it? All right, that's true. That's who does this. But if I have this particular burden, then you who are spiritual are supposed to step in. If I am overtaken in a fault. The particular situation here is if someone, based on what the previous passage says, if someone is walking along, and then he is entrapped by or tangled up in some work of the flesh in the previous text. So that would be, you see, the particular, the principle for all is applied in one case especially here. And the other thing to notice in this text is it moves from the plural, ye. Now, for example, if this were translated literally, verse 2 would say, bear ye one another's burdens, so that we would understand this is a plural activity. And in fact, the Old American Standard Version does translate it that way. But then, if you look down into verse 3, at the end of verse 1, keep watch on yourself. There's the singular. And then in verse 3, we go back to the singular again. And then verses 4 and 5, each one individually, you see. So, if you say, based on the previous section, the principle, bear one another's burdens, applied to circumstances where a particular burden is prominent, that is someone overtaken in a trespass. And in that case, we have a plural obligation that's to be handled with individual watch and care about ourselves as persons. Now, how does that all work out? Well, that's what our study is about tonight. How do we touch all of these bases? So just think with me as we go along here. First off, the particular problem, as we just mentioned, is stated in verse 1. We're just going to think right down through this passage this time. If anyone is caught in any transgression... caught brings to mind the idea of an animal entrapped. He's in a situation he didn't particularly think through and mean to get in. And of course, that can happen figuratively to a human person, can't it? Maybe you have known that experience in one time or another where it dawns on you, oh my, what have I gotten myself into? It started with a word said wrong, or it started with my putting myself in the wrong crowd or in the wrong place at the wrong time, or something I actually punched send with. You know, and that's what happens. And I'm told this could be translated, even if anyone is caught in any transgression. Now, if I'm right, this is drawing from what's just been said, then it will have a meaning that we can stop and think over. So, any brother, if anyone is overtaken by a trespass, and I've used overtaken, the old translation, to show this is where someone is, it's like it sneaked up on him, and he's overtaken by a trespass. A trespass is a false step or a blunder. And in the setting, I keep pointing at the screen that's not working, I'm sorry, but in the setting, this is, so how could this happen? Well, even if a person is walking by the Spirit and is trying to keep in step with what the Spirit teaches and so forth, and his general lifestyle and his way of life is characterized by love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, would there be a possibility that it ever it might sneak up on him that there would be idolatry where he They find himself devoted to the wrong thing momentarily. Would it ever be possible for a case of jealousy to hit him? Could he ever find himself experiencing strife and enmity with another person? I'm not saying those things would be his lifestyle while he's walking in the Spirit, but once he's walking in the Spirit, by the Spirit, led by the Spirit, his human nature still exists. So would it be possible for him to have a moment in which that kind of stuff might sneak up on him? You're not nodding. Few of you are, for the wrong reasons, but you know it's possible, don't you? All of us, any one of us could have that happen, right? And have had it happen. And so, what happens in that moment, and this could be a work of the flesh, it could be the faults, the elements of the law that Paul has been worried about them believing here in Galatians. At that moment, an obligation falls on those who are spiritual. And that means, in this context, those who are in step with the Spirit and whose lives the fruit of the Spirit is apparent. Which ones of the spiritual? Every one of them, Gene, that's right. So in this discussion written to the brothers, it says, would I be right to say that every person in this room who's in Christ is in this picture either overtaken in a fault or having an obligation toward those who are? Yeah, I'd be right, wouldn't it? Every one of us then is in one of those two points right there. There is not a spiritual person who has no obligation to brothers and sisters who are overtaken in a fault. You agree or disagree? Okay. So that kind of takes off the table the somebody should do something approach to fellowship. Why the preacher or the elders should go see him. No. No, you should if you see the need. Right? And there's the challenge. And of course, this is a similar thing we've been pointing out in all these one another situations. Now, what is that obligation? It is to restore him. And all the word studies say that this word for restore is the one in Mark chapter 1 that's translated for mending, the fisherman mending the nets, or a doctor setting a bone and a broken bone or fractured bone and putting it in its place. And it means to restore him to his previous condition before he was overtaken in that fault or before she was, to restore. Do you look at yourself as a mender? A doctor? That's the view. Now, it goes ahead to say that this is a task which requires a certain attitude. It's a task which requires a spirit of, and depending on the translation you're reading, either gentleness or meekness or, in some cases, humility. Now, just glance back up at the first word in chapter 5 and verse 23. What is that? Gail? Meekness is the same word, gentleness. So would it be right to say, go about this like a spiritual person? You who are spiritual, do this with a spiritual attitude. In other words, in a spirit of gentleness. Why is it so important that an effort made to restore a brother who is caught in a trespass, why is it so important that it be done with an attitude of gentleness or a spirit of gentleness? shows his concern for that person and a real concern. Does it have anything to do with how the person might respond? All right. I'm glad you said that, John. So let me read you a quote I brought here. A harsh, bitter... let me read the whole little paragraph. There's no more effective approach than a gentle, compassionate, kind, and patient approach when dealing with another person with problems. A harsh, bitter, insensitive approach only threatens the person at fault. And since Christians in this condition are already weak and very guilty, they'll usually not respond positively to a strong negative encounter. Such an approach may only make the problem worse. That is another way of describing human nature, I think. When someone approaches any of us with a critical, judgmental, fault-finding attitude, the most natural thing in the world is for us to defend ourselves. Sometimes, even where our behavior is indefensible. And so the point would be, go about this like you are trying to restore the person, not like you're trying to get satisfaction for your own aggrieved feeling. Timothy George, a commentator, says, restoration cannot be accomplished without confrontation. And this may require firm words and a stern rebuke. Yet even especially in these cases, Luther's old advice to a shepherd charged with setting a lapsed brother back on the right path should be heeded. And here it is, I quote, "Run unto him, and reaching out your hand, raise him up again, comfort him with sweet words, and embrace him with motherly arms." That's a description of gentleness that maybe we could take with us and kind of think that over. Now, I asked you a while ago if anybody has ever borne a burden of yours that really helped you, really was a blessing to me. Ask you this. Did they do it with the spirit of gentleness? I bet if you look back at it, it helped because it was done with that spirit. Now, it goes ahead to say, but if you're a spiritual person and you're attending to this obligation to restore a brother overtaken in the fault and you're acting with the spirit of gentleness, then even then, keep watch on yourself. You'll need to keep watch on yourself lest you also be tempted. That's kind of a puzzling statement if you saw that it was a problem and you cared enough to go try to help, how are you going to be tempted by it? Well, think of some ways. What if you go talk to somebody and he doesn't respond just like you want him to? And he gets sort of making excuses and insisting that he can do what he wants to. What are you going to do? Is it possible to get frustrated and say something you shouldn't say? It's possible. I've done it before. I know it's possible. See, so if you think about it, it's also with some sins, some kinds of trespasses. It's kind of like the old situation where you get drawn into with some of it. There's some kinds of behavior where you get pulled in doing the same things. I brought someone, this is from Brother Jack McKinney in his Truth for Today book on Galatians. He says, here's some of the temptations that might pose a danger to Christians who are trying to restore brother. Let me read these five things, see what you think. One, failing to make spiritual and prayerful preparation. If a doctor were mending a bone, for example, what kind of preparation might he make? First thing, he might put gloves on. he might want to get a picture of it so he'd know what he's working with, you know, that kind of thing, and understand the situation. Two, allowing sympathetic personal relations with the sinner to blur the restorer's objectivity. And he says those who confront the erring brother have to be able to assess the harm that his sin's doing to the church and to the holy name of the Lord honestly. Third, expressing passionate zeal or indignation that may be interpreted as impatience or anger, which then would harden the sinner's heart and then incite resistance or even rebellion. Fourth, giving any appearance of pride or self-righteousness on the part of the admonisher. And fifth, forgetting that all parties involved are a company of sinners equally dependent on God's grace and mercy. We'll come up on that one again in a minute. But you can kind of see where we have to watch ourselves. Now, I've not mentioned one of the ways where we have to watch ourselves, which is, I think, the most tempting. Think about this one for a second. I recognize a brother overtaken in a fault. I recognize that I have an obligation to act in an effort to restore him. What at that moment is the first temptation I have? How might I be overtaken in a fault most easily? I tried. Not doing anything. Thinking that I have no obligation. So I could think that someone else should do that. You see what I'm getting at with that. Maybe that's just my thing. I know it's not just mine because John saw that too here. All right, so now let's move to the principle that underlies this obligation. Bear one another's burdens. Verse 2, and this is what we set out to think through tonight. So here are some of the things that come up in verse 2. Number one, all brothers have burdens. That's why that this could be something that involves any of us, and this is why all of us together deal with it. All brothers have burdens. What might they be? I mentioned on your paper, the word for burdens means a heavy weight that oppresses, all right? And it can include anything from a load of responsibility and care. How many of you right now have responsibilities and cares of different kinds, varying loads, right? All the way from that to a sorrow or a personal infirmity or a weakness, a grief, sometimes a sin. That's on our conscience. So all brothers have burdens. That's the picture here in this situation. Now, other brothers can bear them, or at least can help bear them. The word for bear means shouldering or carrying something. In this case, the weight. Can you think of any case in the New Testament where someone is said to have borne something that belonged to us. So, Jesus, remember, he went out carrying, shouldering his cross. That, all right, this is the same word, by the way, as was used in that case here. Others can bear, can assist, and can shoulder part of the of this load or this burden, this weight. But this is one another work. There is not a picture here where I am permitted to say, I want you guys to be there to bear my burdens when I am needed. You guys. But don't bother me with yours. That's not the picture here. This is one another. This is mutual. This is an expression of mutual concern and mutual support, which means that it's give and take. It is shared. All right? And then, in doing this, the law of Christ is fulfilled. This is what Paul says. In doing this, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Now, in Galatians, this brings up an interesting contrast to the law of Moses, which the people wanted to address, according to chapter 4 and verses 9 and 10, by observing days and months and seasons and years, or in chapter 5 and verse 2 with circumcision. Notice that all of those are outward rules or requirements, legal requirements. On the other hand, there's the law of Christ. And the law of Christ requires that we love God with all of our heart and then love our neighbors as ourselves. Verse 14, as Christ has. Notice the correspondence between Christ bearing the cross and His loving us, and now our fulfilling the law of Christ by bearing each other's burdens. That's the picture that develops here. And notice that this closes the circle that was started in chapter 5 and verse 14. The whole law is fulfilled in one word: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. John 13:34 and 15:12 have Jesus saying, this is the commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I've loved you. And then 1 John 4 and verse 21, among other places in John, describe this also as the commandment or the law that we have. So in what sense does Christ still bear our burdens? Our sins, right. All our sins were laid on Him. He has borne our sins in His body on the tree, right? So in that way, you take a brother who's overtaken in a fault. How am I going to imitate the love of Christ or fulfill the law of Christ toward him? I'm not only going to be concerned with restoring him, but I am willing to bear the inconvenience and the consequences of the sin with him. I'm willing to extend mercy to him. That's what I'm getting at. And that's what the text seems to ask of us. Now, we come to the personal aspects of this. And I'm just again, we're just looking down through the passage here. So now then we're at verse 3, really 3 through 5 in this part of it. And here are the personal aspects. We go about fulfilling the law of Christ in this way. First, with no one deceiving himself. This is just verse 3. If anyone thinks he is something when he's nothing, he what? Deceives himself. He fools himself. He makes it seem like it's not like it is, in other words. And the fact is, what Paul says here, if a man is thinking like he's something, like, I always bear my own burdens. I never need anybody to bear my burdens. I have no obligation to anyone else's burdens. They're in it. That's their own responsibility. That's thinking like you're something. And Paul says that's deceiving yourself to act like that. You're going to make it to heaven on your own. And he says the fact is that all of us are nothing. And I've adapted this thought just a bit, but I think it's implied in verse 3, when he is nothing. And I think what he's saying is, look, all of us, every person saved by the grace of God needs to realize that he, by definition, doesn't deserve to be. Right? Grace means you were given something you could not possibly have earned. And in that way, by definition, a person saved by grace realizes he's dependent on what Christ is bearing for us, and that we're also beneficiaries of other people's help, and we are secure in that, but we're not deceiving ourselves by it. And then Paul goes ahead to say, each one is to test his own work. This is verse 4. Now let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. And I can't see any way that there could be boasting in this sense unless Paul is talking about, I see a brother overtaken in a fault, and I think, I'm better than him. I'd never do that. I may have my weaknesses or my problems, but they're not like that. You ever catch yourself thinking that way? Honest now. And what Paul is saying, if you think about it, is don't subjectively compare your work with your neighbor's. Instead, objectively test your work in light of the Lord's expectations. You know, you get your test back. You're in high school. You get your test back, and you're a little worried about your 75 on there. And you glance over at your neighbor's desk, and you see his 73, and you say, "Well, I'm a lot smarter than that, at least." You still made a D. Now, that's, again, human nature. That's how we are. We want to compare ourselves favorably to somebody else. The discipline of Christians is always to compare ourselves to the Lord, right? How did he live? What has he said? What does he want? Compared to him, how are we doing? And then Paul goes ahead and make the point, for, here's the reason, each will have to bear his own load. Notice the translation of the last word there. The first word for burden, back up in verse 2, meant a heavy weight. An oppressive load. This word means a soldier's backpack. If you think of the kids' I make Kyron Madden get frustrated with me. I make the terrible mistake of calling them their book bags, and I get corrected. No, they're backpacks. This is the word for backpacks. And it would be telling us, look, everybody will have to shoulder his own pack of personal responsibilities and normal duties, both in this life and then ultimately in judgment. Nobody can appear for you there. So we all have these things to attend to. One of them is to restore a brother that we see who's overtaken in a fault. That's a part of our regular duty. Now, how does Paul take these same terms and apply them to himself down in chapter 6 in verse 17? Look down there. Same phrases again. You can tell he's been a bit frustrated with what some of the opponents among the Galatians are doing. Paul says, from now on, let no one cause me trouble, for I bear on my body the marks of Jesus. And he's testing his own work and bearing his own load there, and it's protecting him against criticism and problems. So I've put the other questions there just on your paper to think about, and I wonder, do you have comments or observations or things you want to bring up down to here, Luis? Yes, that's I agree. That's what I was trying to get at. That's the first temptation, is it would apply when we don't do anything. You'd be overtaken in a fault right there. Right. Anyone else? All right, just think for a minute now. What do you think is the biggest obstacle to our doing what this paragraph calls for? All right, the hesitation to identify fault. We live in a culture where we're not supposed to recognize anything anyone does is wrong. So think about verses 19 through 21 mention several of these things. You and I can recognize when that's getting hold of someone. They're outward. Many of them have outward aspects to them. I think the biggest obstacle is to think that we're just the thought that it's not really our business, that we're not supposed to involve ourselves in other people's problems. Gene?
One thing kind of goes along with that is it's hard to get to know someone, even coming here just 4 hours a week.
Right.
Oh. You hit that door just as soon as amen is said. You're not even sticking around to get to know somebody in that 4 hour period. Spend a little time with each other through the week.
All right. That is a very realistic observation. And so would I be on target then, Gene, in saying this one another is another case where it has to assume the other ones that we've studied so far going on. This one is not, you're not going to recognize when there is something that needs to put back in place if we don't even recognize what's going on in each other's lives. That's wisdom. Thank you. Then the next, what do you regard as the most significant threat when we're trying to meet this the obligation that this places on us? I think the immediate response in me is, I'm afraid I'll do it wrong. I'm afraid I will say something that'll make it worse. I'm afraid to try. Are you that way too? Yeah, I think, David? Say it loud.
I'm afraid to
Yeah, so we have to, in that way, I think you're right, Dave. I think that's a fear. And I think that makes it so important that we recognize the rest of fellowship as laying a setting so that we can do this. So let me read you this statement again. Run unto him, and reaching out your hand, raise him up, comfort him with sweet words, and embrace him in motherly arms. That's good advice. So let's have anybody with any other